Okay, good evening, everyone. Good evening, good evening. Good evening, everyone. I can still wish everyone a good chodesh, a chodesh tov. And Baruch Hashem, what an incredible zechus it is to be able to begin our mission together here in Eretz Yisrael. Our mission together here in Yerushalayim, Yir HaKodesh. So Baruch Hashem, we are here, a group from Baltimore and beyond. Baltimore and beyond, Baruch Hashem, all with ties, familial ties to Baltimore. And really coming together, Baruch Hashem, because in this time of overwhelming need and overwhelming pain, but yet also overwhelming symptom of Klal Yisrael, it is incumbent and it behooves us to really be together with our brothers and sisters. So we're trying to figure out how to go ahead and begin this program. How do you kick off? You know, where's the Tara? Atara's, first of all, a very thank you to our incredible, incredible tour operators, Atara and Barak, who are joining us here for Hashem. They're incredible. You know, Atara Ziffer on Thursday night at our pre-trip gathering asked the question about, you know, what should our kavana, what should our intentions be coming on this trip? It's such a different, you know, Baruch Hashem, I think many of us have had the opportunity to be in Eretz Yisrael so many different times, and it's so different now. Everything is different now. The world is different now. The country is different now. Am Yisrael is different now. Everything is different. So what's the kavana? Like, what's the mindset that we're supposed to have? And the truth is, we're not going to answer that because I don't think there's one answer. I think that answer will become clearer as the trip goes on. But when we were planning the trip, one of the things that I asked Shafrira Breuer, who is our tour operator, is if we can get Mrs. Jen Erick to be able to start off our mission. And it's on a personal level. Jen, I want to express my hakara satov to you. Binyamin Meir Erli, 21 years old, Shem Yikom Damo, fell in northern Gaza, lived the life of love for Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael, and was willing to go ahead and pay the ultimate price for us. You know, sometimes we think about these soldiers who literally give up everything, and we forget they're not just fighting for their families, and they're not just fighting for the residents of Medinas Yisrael. They're fighting for Am Yisrael. They're fighting for Am Yisrael. We're here with a mother who has given her son for Am Yisrael and for Eretz Yisrael. But I want to use it as an opportunity to express my particular hakara satov to Jen. There was a video, and I don't remember, maybe it was by Shloshim, where the Shlomo Katz was there, and you spoke about Binyamin's list, about how this incredible young man just had a list of things he wanted to do in life. So the fact that a person has a list of things they want to do in life, that's incredible. I don't think that's unique. What was unique is that at 21 years old, how many of those things that Binyamin Hashem Yikom Damo was zocha to fulfill? And I will tell you, I saw that video and I must have watched it 15 times. And it changed my life. Because what I did that very same day is I took out a pen and paper and I made a list. I made a list about what do I want to accomplish during my time in this world. None of us know how much time HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us. But I realized that this precious neshama, he didn't live life haphazardly. He didn't just kind of like wake up and go wherever. There was a kivun. There was a direction. There was a plan. And it was beautiful. And I remember the list had so many different things. Everything from like, I think I want to like own a horse, to I want to be a lochem. You know, I want to be a combat soldier. And like this beautiful combination on one hand that showed like a young man who was so serious and so profound and so grounded in what it meant to be a Jew in Eretz Yisrael, but at the same time who had, for lack of a better word, I'll call it like a joie de vie, like a joy of life, like a happiness, a simcha. And that moment I realized that Binyamin Meir Erli Hashem Yikom Damo had become my life Rebbe. And if I could do, if I could live like he lived, and not with horses, but if I could live like he lived, with direction, with purpose, then no matter how long or how short I'm in this world, hopefully, I'll be able to make a difference. So it is a tremendous zuchus. And Jen, I know we're probably pulling you away from something else, leaving your family and coming here to be with us tonight. But on behalf of our entire group, first of all, we hope and we daven that Binyamin's neshama should have an aliyah. That in Eretz Hashem, he should find menucha tachas kisei hakavod. That he should be a melech yosher for your entire mishpacha and for all of Klal Yisrael. And halavai we should be zochem Eretz Hashem for Mashiach, for Tchiyas HaMeisim. We should be zochem Eretz Hashem to rejoice in the day when your family once again is together again. Thank you for joining us. Chavra, please give your attention to Jen Erli.
I don't know, I could just start listening all day. I don't know. I feel bad that I have to get up. I would have liked to listen to this all day. Weish. Jen, are you okay if I record a little bit just to share with friends? With Simcha. Thank you, Patrick. Wow, there are so many different pieces of what I wanted to add on to that, but I just really, really first want to say the biggest thank you for you being here. I had gone to America a few weeks ago, and I was incredibly hesitant to go. Kilu mamash, I did not want to. I didn't want to leave. I didn't want to leave war. I didn't want to leave my family, and it took until Rav Shmuel Eliyahu said, Mamash, you must go. Because until then, I wasn't really listening to anybody, including my husband. And I think the real reason I didn't want to go was because I just felt like, who am I talking to? Who's going to understand? I'm not going to understand them. They're not going to understand me. Our life is like this. I know they sense you. They send stuff. They send gear. But I don't know, do they understand our lives here? Do they feel? Do they connect? I don't know, I wasn't ready to face it. And then I went. And I saw the complete opposite. And I saw how everybody felt, and everybody cared, and everybody davened, and everybody was broken, and everybody's tears, and tefillot, and hearts were with us. And I felt like I got the biggest present to be able to go and see that myself. And I felt like I was the ambassador. I came back here and I've been telling everybody here, Arachenu Beit Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz are very much connected to Arachenu Be'eretz Yisrael. And so the fact that you're here is again proof of that. That not only are you, packing duffels and buying out every, tactical need thing on Amazon, but that you've taken off time from your family, from your work, from your everything to be here, to give and to donate and to do. So really, on behalf of the Jews of Eretz Yisrael, I can really say thank you. And it really means a lot to us that you're here. I know I've been asked, really, does it? Yes, it does. I was working recently with somebody who I was at an army base. I don't know, is there a door? I feel like I don't have the loudest projection. Okay, whatever. Somebody was here, and she said she was at an army base, and she was visiting from America also, volunteering, and she was peeling clementines, and and handing out clementines that she was peeling, and the soldier said, "No, Solo, Sheva Lama, why are you here?" And she says, "Well, because I'm peeling clementines." And he said, "No, really." And she said, "I've been peeling clementines for 8 hours. This is why I'm here." And he was so moved and so touched that he couldn't believe it. So really, really, what you're about to do on this week is so kadosh. And I think that it will, Be'ezrat Hashem, transform you, because you will see what it is to be so connected, really, really, arm in arm with Eretz Yisrael's Yidin. In our land, right? And we are, as the Rav said, a very transformed nation. I keep saying, I think now we got the point that we're not individuals, we're brothers and sisters. And brothers and sisters sometimes have sibling rivalry, but at the end of the day, you know your siblings, right? Siblings at the end of the day know they love each other. And sometimes you get along a little better, you can disagree, and you can get... But then you realize, oh yeah, we do love each other, and we are still one family. I also wanted to say a few things. One of the things on Binyamin's list, this is like a very new piece as of today. One of the things that was on his list, though, was that he wanted to be a Kohen. Which, we're not Kohanim. By the way, he did actually, I found out afterwards, he did own a horse. He had on his list was to own a horse. He ended up working on a farm, so his transportation was all to go. Maybe I'll get to this. He did actually use horses to get around. And then I thought I knew that, but that he didn't actually have a horse. But no, I found out he actually did own a horse with a friend. So welcome to Binyamin's life. But I kept thinking, like, what is this about the Kohen? And then I started to understand that a Kohen is there to serve Am Yisrael. And a Kohen is there to connect Am Yisrael and to Hashem. But then, I feel like these parshiyot are like, right? I mean, if there's anything more exciting about these five parshiyot, I mean, I'm so worried about Kitisa. Like, we cannot afford to make a mistake right now. We can't afford to take a step back. But I guess as I was reading it, usually I'm so focused on, like, but somehow this year I was focused more on the Luchos Shniyos. I was focused on the Yud Gimel Midos Haracham Salachti Kibarach. I was like okay with it this year. It was very interesting. But these parashas of building Klei HaMishkan, you know, I was reading today about, you know, the Avnei Shoam and the Choshen HaMishpat, and I kept thinking, it's so heavy. This coin gadol, the amount of weight he must have to carry when he is wearing his gear, and he can't mess up. It has to be perfect. We're not even talking about all the rimonim, but like all these stones. I mean, I know that women can wear stones sometimes, but this is like a little more. This is, I'm saying, the amount of weight and the cane that he's using, right? These are not like our, you know, disposable, pretty plastic paper good stuff. This is like real heavy duty nechoshet. Like these are, and it has to be perfect, and it can't spill, and it has to. I think he must be so strong. But I don't picture Aaron Akon like working out. Like how did that happen? And then there was a post today from the Jerusalem race. I ran this amazing driving here. I was like telling my Chana because I ran here on Friday in the race. I ran the half marathon because 2 years ago is what I ran with Binyamin. So this year I ran it with Binyamin's spirit next to me. And so on the way here, I was telling my Chana, this is what I listened to when I got here, and I heard this song, Tite Nacharilana, whatever. But there was a post that went out, I saw it this morning, of a soldier who had been doing service for 24 years. And 4 years ago, he left the army for post-trauma, enough. And then came October 7th, Simchas Torah, and he lost 9 of his closest yamam. Klein 9 of his closest friends in the army, and he decided he's going back in. And he went back into service. And for the Jerusalem race, he decided he was running not just the full marathon in all of his gear, but he had 22 kilos, so what, 45 pounds of his friends' equipment that he ran the 42 kilometers with, a full 20, whatever, you know, full marathon. I thought, why did he have the strength to do this? I'm sure he didn't train with it. First of all, you don't train full marathon level. You don't train. You definitely don't train. How did he do this? I don't know what. I don't know how he felt afterwards, but I think he just had a mission. He was just going to do it for his friends, and it didn't matter what he felt or if he thought it was too hard. It wasn't up for discussion. This is what he was going to do. And I was thinking, that's what the Kohen is doing. The Kohen Gadol, he has all this extra. He has to do it perfectly. He doesn't care how hard it is. I don't even think he had to train. He's just focused to get the job done the way it has to get done and to perfection, and that's what he's going to do. Well, is that Kohen? Binyamin, that's the way he works. He's just going to get the job done. Doesn't matter if it's hard. Doesn't matter if it seems impossible. Binyamin had a line. Masha Kashen Nase, whatever's hard to do today, whatever's impossible, I'll do tomorrow. Nothing was actually too impossible to ever do. I thought that was a good explanation of his wanting to be a Kohen. You're just going to do it, and you're going to do it perfect, and you're going to get it all done, and it doesn't matter if it's uncomfortable, it's just going to be perfect. So we made Aliyah 17 years ago, B'chaste Hashem, 17 and a half, gosh, this summer it'll be 18. We came with three kids. We moved from Cedarhurst, was our last stop. I'm originally from Florida. My husband's from Manchester, England. And we had three kids when we came. They were 6, 4, and 2. And then came the younger three, born here, Baruch Hashem, three Sabras. And Chana is our youngest, a 10-year-old. So Binyamin was the second. When you make Aliyah and your son is 4, you're not, I have a girl above him, so you're not necessarily thinking, like, army. Okay. You're not really thinking, you know, they're going to go serve in the army. It's not necessarily what's crossing your minds. And even when they're serving and you know they're going to the army, you're not really thinking war altogether. But the truth is, Binyamin was a fighter. You know, there's soldiers and there's fighters. Binyamin was a fighter. And he was a fighter when he was 21, and he was a fighter when he was 15, and when he was 5, which doesn't make raising him very easy. He was a tough cookie. He was difficult to raise. I always say he was very passionate about whatever he wanted to do, and then there was no stopping him. That was. And the truth is that there were a lot of tefillos and a lot of tears that went into this boy. A lot of seeking advice, parenting workshops. He shaped us to be the parents. He trained us well. But through it all, Binyam and I were good buddies. He was my right-hand man. I counted on him for a lot. He took good care of me. I kept thinking, like, of the halacha, you know, when you're davening Shmoneh Esrei and you're leaning on a shtender, and, like, how do you know if you're leaning too much versus standing on your own? Is it considered that you're standing? And so, obviously, we know the halacha, if you pull away the shtender and you fall over, you're leaning too much. It's not, right? And I thought that was going to be the case. I counted on him. He understood me. He had my back. But I didn't fall over. Yes. Shem's holding me up. And I know Am Yisrael's also holding us up, and Binyamin's holding us up. In fact, this was the fastest race I ever ran this race. I definitely beat my time by like crazy, because for sure Binyamin's just pushing me all along. It was. I wore his shirt, and it said Binyamin on the back. People were like, no, Binyamin's definitely got your back. but he did. I definitely felt him pushing me forward. And I use that a lot in life, because I always thought about, even before this race, but from the last time we ran, I always thought, you know, Binyamin, there was a piece in the race, Jebetish, I'm sure you know, right? It's like a hatichat, you know, piece of hill. And he had, even we were running this 2 years ago, so he's pushing my back. Binyamin, if you want to go, gesund to heights. And he said, no, I'm just helping. I said, I don't need help. I'm not. You can go if you want to go faster. But I hold on to that, because I feel like, okay, we got hills. He pushes me. He's got my back. So raising him was really not so simple. He went through... 11th grade was his 7th school. So we had been through a fair share. My husband always says he wasn't ever kicked out. He was just asked not to come back. At the end of the year, he made it through the year most of the time. Sometimes he just had enough and he left that one. But, you know, then we worked to find. But he knew that I believed in him. And that was a real... He definitely knew that, and at least, you know, going up to Shemaim, he knows I trusted him and I believed in him. And he definitely shared a lot more with me than my husband, which is good, because there were a lot of things that I knew that my husband probably only found out at Shiva. Which was good, because then at least he got to sleep more through the years. But a lesson in parenting is we plant a lot of seeds. And you don't realize seeds will really grow. And a lot of the things that I have said all through the years, you know, Binyamin, don't be so quick to give up, push through things when they're hard, you know, all the things that we say as parents, right? But they were seeds that were planted, and they were really growing, because that one in particular, I mean, yes, you know, he learned to push through hard but good. You know, we say that there was like the before, the pre-16 Binyamin and the after 16 Binyamin. 16 was this like real turning point in his life. That was when he made the list, that's when he went to Uman, that's when he gave up his smartphone, all these things, and that's when he, in 11th grade, you know, this new school, that was a lot of changes that happened in 11th grade. And he was really ready to fly. Thank God, Baruch Hashem, Bechasda Hashem, he didn't give up through the third school or the fifth school, and he didn't like say, forget it, I'm done. Actually, there was a point he wanted to be done. And he wanted to just do like, not homeschool, but whatever, just go and take his exams. But we just kept saying, you're going to fly, we're going to find the school, we're going to find a good school, we're going to do it. Anyway, 16, he also started working on this farm. And I think that was a big turning point in his life, with all the other pieces in place. This farm, I'm sure it's not on your list of where Atar is taking you this week. You might go to farms, but not this one. This is one out in the Shomron, in the West Bay, by Beit Zuf, where you have Jewish communities that are there, and then you have Arab communities not so. Okay, as a Chavash al Tzvi. אז בנימין היה שם. אולי הכרת אותו. בטח, אולי בפנים. So basically, the community of Neve Tzuf, outside Neve Tzuf, is a farm. And this is the farm that would just be there with cattle, sheep, and cows. And he would do guard duty and whatever. And it just keeps the Arabs in the other communities a little further back. In fact, so Binyamin didn't even know people of Neve Tzuf, really. I mean, he didn't. And this is, he protected it. In fact, people from Neve Tzuf came to the Shiva just to say thank you. They didn't know him, he didn't know them, it didn't matter to him. This is whole Binyamin's whole life. It doesn't matter who, it doesn't, you're Am Yisrael and it's Eretz Yisrael. That's all that matters. So he, and this is how he would spend his time, from 11th grade, really until the very end. He was there in Simchas Torah. So if he wasn't in school, or he went, his last school was in Eilat, and then his next in Hesder he did in Tzfat. there was actually one day he hitchhiked all the way from Eilat to Tzfat. I mean, driving is about, 6 hours? I don't know how, it must have taken him a full day's work. He didn't understand why you would spend the money on buses, why not, you know, like you can talk to people this way. There was no point in telling a kid like this, don't hitchhike because he's going to. You just have to say, message me when you get in the next car. We just like, yes, I work. We have to work with him. What can I tell you? So he would spend time at this farm. And it was really his second home, or maybe his first home, I don't know. He built a house out there, which is a little more than like, it's like a hut. Glorified tents of some sort. The first few years didn't even have running water. They had a generator. And he built, that's where he built a house. They built a shul recently. They built it up. He actually even most recently built, this was crazy. A few months back. Well, now it's already a few more than a few months because this is 16 weeks ago. So whatever. I don't know. 7-8 months ago, he was doing one of his army duties by the Mitzrayim border. And it was a whole, they were learning about these vineyards that were there, and how when the vineyards were first planted there, the Bedouins uprooted them, and then they planted them again, the Bedouins uprooted them, and then eventually they stopped uprooting it, and their vineyards are there. And Binyamin was so moved by this. See, this is what I mean. Binyamin doesn't do things half measure. Binyamin was so moved by this that he decided when he gets off from the army, he's going to work, make money, and then plant a vineyard. And that is actually what he did. Outside of Neve Tzuf, in this farm, he then Erev Sukkos, the last time he was out, he spent the whole day, came into Yonta filthy, stinky, and he came home, he said, okay, I planted a vineyard today. I was like, what? And he did. That was, in fact, recently, they got more land allotted from the Moetza, from the state, and for more vineyards on Har Gofna. And from my understanding, Har Gofna is where the wines came from for Nisuch HaYayin, for the Beit HaMikdash. This is typical Binyamin. Wines will come from him. I'm not waiting 4 years. We'll pinch hit. We'll find another person, another vineyard that's going to give wines to the Beit HaMikdash until then. But I guess when you're working on a farm like this, like, what actually matters? Right? You're spending his time herding cows. He's raising the cows and doing guard duty. This is how he spends his time when he's not in the army. In fact, his army friends were over this week and they said, for sure Binyamin came to the army every week. It was vacation for him. Because compared to his life on the farm, it actually was. There, he's up all night, he's doing guard duty. You don't have your commanders, you don't have a whole team of people. It was two or three families that live there, and then some guys. This is all that's out there on this mountaintop. So when you're there, like, what matters to you? Like, what, you don't care about clothes. You don't care about, like, you don't care. Your food is simple. It was the most, like, I don't want to say primitive, because that's like a negative thought, but it was just so simple. And he just didn't care about anything else other than the land and the people. And this, he got to be as idealistic as he was by being on this farm. So this is how he would spend his non-army time. I feel like I'll just say the way he died, because it proves that how he died is how he lived. On Shabbos morning, 16 weeks ago, there was a battle that was taking place in North Gaza. Gaza, Aza is the same thing, you know that, right? Not everybody does, apparently. So there was a battle that was taking place, and there were three terrorists they knew had ran in, had, you know, run into this particular house, and they were shooting at soldiers that were around the house, some quite seriously. One of them seriously, Yair Lifshitz, who Baruch Hashem just got out of hospital and is now in rehab, but otherwise, it was not a pretty sight. And some commanders were trying to take control of the situation. At one point, this commander of a different pluga, of a different battalion, Jamal Abbas, a Druze soldier actually, he decided he's going in. He can't have the soldiers being shot at anymore. So he goes in with his right-hand man, Shachar Friedman from Yerushalayim, and they decided they're going in. And Binyamin is in charge of this particular machine gun called a Negev. Binyamin was a very tall, like, strong, built guy. And this Negev is a very heavy machine gun. So Binyamin was in charge of this gun. So he says, you can't go in without me. You need this. I'm going in with you. And they went in. They threw grenades. They threw RPGs, all sorts. And the other two of the terrorists were killed, but one was hiding in the corner behind a couch and killed the three of them upon coming in. But the godless is really that if there was any way Binyamin was going to go, this is the biggest chesed Hashem could have done for us. And it's the only way Binyamin would have wanted to go. Because this is a boy who literally could have been killed so many times over. With all of his bravery. You know, I don't know if anybody here is doing Nachyomi, but I always keep saying that Binyamin is like Shimshon HaGibor. And then I listen to today's share, I'm like, Namash, Kilo. Today was his line, right? Because what happened? It was a crazy video that went viral where he was with the cows, him and his other friend, another Binyamin, and they were with the cows grazing, and they see the Arabs on the next mountain are coming down, like zigzagging down the mountain, shouting, they're coming. And you see that Binyamin is with the cows in this video. The other guy is from behind, is videoing it. And he's on the phone with the army saying, you have to come. They're going to kill him. You have to come. I need backup. We don't have any neshek. We have no ammo. They're coming. And you see in the video, they're all coming down, down, down. Obviously, the army came because there's more to Binyamin's story. But little Binyamin says to my Binyamin, he says to us, he told the story over at Shiva, like, what were you thinking we were going to do? Like, what did you have in mind if the army wasn't going to come? And Binyamin, from today's parak, like, we could just go fight. He had no fear. It didn't matter to him, because in his mind, this is just the right thing to do, and we're just going to do it. So it made complete sense the way he was killed in Gaza. It's just like, this is a job that has to get done. I'm just going to go in. We're just going to get it done. If I have to, he said before the war, he said many months ago, if I have to die for Eretz Yisrael, I have to die for Eretz Yisrael. Which is not exactly what a parent wants to hear. But at the same time, it's exactly what a parent wants to hear. Because when you feel that, like, what else matters? If this is what's mattering, if this is what you care about, it's what we believe in. So it made sense. If you were to ask Binyamin, you know, if you had another way to go, could you not do that next time? He would have done exactly the same thing. And he would have done it again and 100 times over. In fact, the last thing I said to him before he went into Gaza, I said, Binyamin, just watch over yourself a little bit. Because I know there's no point asking him to, like, watch over himself more than that. But he did. But that's Binyamin's style. Because he doesn't care about himself, he cares about the klala, not because he doesn't have bitachon atzmiya, self-confidence. He has plenty. But he cares about the am, and he cares about the people. And that's, so it made complete and perfect sense that this was the way it was going to be. And b'chasdei Hashem, my husband and I have made a very conscious decision that we're living. And not only are we living, we're trying to live for real. You know, this is what these guys are fighting for. This is what these guys are dying for. Is so that we can live, we can enjoy life in Eretz Yisrael, so that we can get the job done on our level. And so if it means that we had to give a korban, I don't know, I'm looking forward to Vayikra, because, you know, I keep thinking, like, okay, he's a korban ola, lo yedat. I don't know, I'm not at holding, you know, that he's a korban tola yet, but maybe I'll connect to something else as we're going through Vayikra. But, you see, in Gaza, every soldier that comes out will tell you that in every house, there's the same thing. In every single house in Gaza is the same thing, and that is a picture of Al-Aqsa. Right here, Dome of the Rock, Har HaBayit, Akedat Yitzchak, Har Moria, every single house. And when I heard that from his friends, I said, I can't wait till you come out, and you can tell everybody this, because everybody has to know that we need to know that. Everyone has to know that this is what this war is about. They know very well. In fact, every time there's Hezbollah up north are killed, it says it in the news, on the way to Jerusalem, that these terrorists are on the... They know. They're on the way. This is about Yerushalayim. Chad Mashmai, like, it's not even up for discussion. Not only is it about Yerushalayim, we had one big commander come over to the house to talk to us, and I said, can you just confirm this with me? Because I keep hearing from the soldiers that in every house there's a picture of Al-Aqsa. And he said, yes. And it's not just in their house. It's on their foreheads. It's on the bombs that they make. I'm like, oh, thinking, you know, the tzitz. But this is, they know exactly what this war is about. And if we know that that's what this war is about, well, then each and every one of us are soldiers. It means that every single person in Am Yisrael has a very big job to do. Because it's not only front line, which they're doing their hefty part. And they're risking their lives. But it means that every single one of us has a very big job to do if that's what this war is about. And it's not just about Yerushalayim and Korban, you understand, obviously. It's Shechubur LaYachta, right? Yerushalayim HaBniyah. This war cannot end with anything less than Binyan Bayis. It has to be. And I think the proof is, again, in the fact that you're right here. Meaning, the Korban Bayis was... We know Sinas Chinam, right? I mean, this is, and then Hashem has mastered the most magnificent movement of Avat Chinam. Like, no one else could have ever organized. No one could have even dreamt to make such a massive Avat Chinam movement like we have now. And I think that that's why I was so worried about Kitisa. I'm so glad it's over with, you know, because we can't afford to take a step backwards. And I don't care what's going on in the news, because I don't care if somebody says, oh, but the news is already... Doesn't matter what the news says, because it's not what's b'shetach. It's not what's on the streets. It's not what's in the in the territories. Over there, these soldiers, they know very well it doesn't matter left, right, center, this one, that one, anti. There's nothing. They're all one in there. You go into Aza, all these soldiers, they know they're all in it. They know they're all very focused. And we have to learn from them. We have to learn from them that none of us, all the news is all a bunch of garbage. And really, we have to know that this war. In fact, somebody just told me today, it was that one of these soldiers telling me, he says, you know, in the army, the guys are wearing, you know, on their even the most non-religious, they're already wearing it. On all their patches, they have a picture of Mashiach, like a sign that says Mashiach and Beis HaMikdash. They know. We might have to learn from them. They have all their klipots are all taken down. They have no, there are no barriers. They see Emes out there. Because they got rid of all the garbage. And we mamash have to learn from them. And I think that if we really believe that this is about Yerushalayim, we have a achdus, we have a chesed to work on, we have our tefillah, we have a lot that we can work on, and we need to. I keep saying these boys up in Shemayim, they're building that. I think actually they're finished building. I keep saying, you know, Binyamin's a builder. And Ari, you know, Zendelman from Alei Adumim, he's a mathematician, and Elisha, you know, Levenstern, he's up. They all have their different skills in Kohot, all these soldiers up in Shemayim. I think they finished building already. I'm convinced they're just dancing. I think they're just there. David HaMelech is having the time of his life with all his greatest Hamidim. They have, you know, all these soldiers, they're the most, like, you know, they play music and they dance, and then they're vicious and ferocious when they're outside with the enemies. Like this, they're all David HaMelech's. And Shimshon's. And Shimon and Levi. By the way, Binyamin, when one of his friends told us I knew Binyamin told us the reason he's fighting this war is to return the kavod to Am Yisrael. We don't, you know, Am Yisrael needs their dignity back. This is what you do to us, we kill you. So his friend told us, and he came out of the house, he said, Binyamin said to the group why he's fighting this war. So he said that you don't treat our Jewish women like this. We treat our Jewish women like this, we come and we kill you. He said, okay, so he's also Shimon and Levi. But this is it. These are Binyamin's role models, all these soldiers, this is their role models. They're all Ishei Tanakh. If Tanakh didn't end with Megillah's Esther, this would be in Tanakh. This Milchama is in Tanakh. And these soldiers, all the soldiers, the Tanakh soldiers. And Binyamin's also one of them. So Bezrat Hashem. Binyamin is, they're all dancing. Unfortunately, there are enough of them. They can hold hands and reach all the way around the base on the Kush. But I'm sure they're just dancing. No more learning issues. No, they're sitting and they're learning. If they're not dancing, Binyamin gets to sit. No more ADD. He can sit with Rabbi Akiva straight out. No problem. And he can sit with Rashbi. I always said on his list also is to go to Rashbi. I kept saying, why would he write that on his list of like to go to Rashbi? We go up to Meiron like at least once a year. Like, why would he? I think he wanted Rashbi, not Keva Rashbi. Yeah, he's got Rashbi. He sits and he learns. I'm pretty sure that all these guys, no, these chayalots also, they've put the finishing touches already. They're just waiting for us to be zocha to bring the bayit down. Everyone says we're doing this Leilu Nishmas Binyamin and that Leilu Nishmas Binyamin. I'm pretty sure Binyamin's just fine. He's hanging out by Kisei HaKavod, Nirali. Binyamin's getting all of us la'alot et nishmatenu, to raise ourselves up. And Bezrat Hashem, you know, at the Levaya, I had asked people to take on a mitzvah, a masa chesed, lemamesh, lekarev et ha-geula. And if I tell you, I have notebooks and notebooks and Google Docs and stacks of papers and notes that people gave, WhatsApps of things that people have taken on. I'm like, Binyamin is getting, he's the same way, you know, in Israel they call like wild kids. By us, I don't know what you call them. I mean, in America, I don't know what you call them. Right? Like, not crazy, but like acute crazy. So here we call them Shobab. It's like a cute way of saying a nut job, right? Like a crazy one. So I feel like in Shemayim, Binyamin's still being a Shobab. He's saying, yalla, let's move things, let's get things done. Binyamin's zeget torah, like yalla, like get it done. And I'm pretty sure he's getting things moving. Definitely from what I can see, my vantage point, he's gotten a lot moving. I'll give you one example, because this I think was the sweetest one. I don't know how much time I have. If everyone's starving, I'm sorry. I'm sure there's everything for you coming. But the cutest, sweetest one. I mean, I had like the craziest stories of different things that people started doing and whatever, but it's such a sweet one that I related to so well. One lady wrote to me, she said that she wanted to take on davening, like big field, like, you know, to being a better davener, like formal davening. She's like, but I'm just so, I can't keep to it. So I don't want to commit to saying that I'm going to do it, because I can't. She said, so I decided I'm not listening to Goyish music anymore. So I thought, like, what's the, my kesher, right? So she said, well, because if I'm not listening to Goyish music, I'm listening to Jewish music. And if I'm listening to Jewish music, it's Tehillim, it's Tfilot, it's Psukei of Torah. Mm-hmm. So okay, so I'm not davening formally, but at least I'm singing these things all day long. I thought that was just the sweetest, you know, the sweetest one. But kilo, everything. I've gotten anything from Netilat Yadayim before eating, to Moda'ani, to Asher Yatzar, that's not Tfilah Saderach, I volunteer for Mada, and a driver, my driver, he's, Dati light, as we call it. I don't care what he is, to be honest. He's very spiritual, but I know he doesn't. He's not a... I knew he didn't daven, like, very often, to say the least. So, he came to Shiva the first day, and I said, no, I'm... He said, he asked me, Jen, what do you want? What can I do for you? Sugar, I can be chutz b'lit as much as I want now. So I said, come tomorrow morning for davening. Jennifer, and he's atoregetoti, you know, like, I said, you ask me what I want, I'm telling you. So then he came the next morning, finishes, I saw in the window, I saw he had his talis over his head and his tefillin on. I was already crying, but I was crying more. And comes in afterwards and he shows me his arm, look what you did to me. And I said, that's the most beautiful tattoo. And he said, I'm sorry I left you a pile of dust out by the window. I haven't used my tefillin since my bar mitzvah. So then we're talking afterwards, okay, what do you need? What can I do for you? And I said, tomorrow morning, 8 o'clock. He said, yes. I said, you asked. He came the next morning. And now every time I do a shift with him, not only does he tell me that he's been doing, wearing his tefillin, saying Kriyat Shema Lamita, now Shema in the morning, and now he adds in Tehillim every day. Adds on and adds on. This is what Binyam is doing. He's waking people up. And Hazrat Hashem, he's going to keep on his jab, and we know very well. Like the Rav was saying, what he accomplished in his life down here is only a fraction. As much as he accomplished, and he accomplished a lot. He maxed his life. You know, I say, like I teach exercise classes, and I like to give the mashal that, like, when I have to cut class short for whatever reason, it's oy vavoy to everybody else, because they know that for every few minutes that class is going to be short, it means they're going to be working that much harder during class. But they're like, this is his life, right? Like, he knew he had to cram it in, because if you know you're ready to die for Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael, and you know you're willing to, you best bet you're going to live your life, but good. And he crammed it. And he is like the Ezo Agibor HaKoveshet Yisrael. I think all his physical strength came from his internal strength. He was really, he worked on himself. He had, even when I got it, he gave in his smartphone, and when he was 16, he I really feel bad. Do we need to...
Everyone ate on the plane.
That was this morning? Okay, I didn't get a time.
Okay.
I can talk all day.
Okay.
So he gave in his smartphone when he was 16 because he felt like it was wasting his time. He felt that it was... He didn't care what other people... He couldn't understand why if you were with people, why they would be on their phones, even though they were talking to each other through their phone, but talking out of the phone. Like, he just didn't understand the whole thing. He didn't understand why he would care what anybody ate for breakfast. He didn't understand, like, the whole thing. Like, and he didn't like to hear other people's opinions. He had his own, and that was it. He was very political. He knew exactly, like, where he held politically, so he didn't want to, like, hear all the other noise. Anyway, so he gave him his smartphone when he was 16 in 11th grade, and he got a Nokia dumb phone, whatever. And in fact, he created an area in the school that was a cell phone free zone. so that people who were hanging out were actually very present. And then he even got other kids. He actually fundraised in the school so that anybody who wanted to give him their smartphone and buy a Nokia phone, like, the school would give the money through the fundraising that he did. Is this what I mean? Like, when he wants to do something, it's like you cannot stop him. He's passionate. Anyway, so when we then eventually, like last year, he needed to get a smartphone for the Army. I don't know, he had to have certain apps or have a car. I don't know, whatever it was. So he got a smartphone. And I was all excited when I got his phone from the Army, like, what's going to be in the phone? What am I going to see? What, like, Binyamin juice is there? He had blocked the internet. He blocked, like, all these things. He had, like, the apps that he needed and, you know, for paying this and directions for that. Everything else he blocked. And whatever pictures were on there were the forwarded pictures from friends. He just doesn't care. And I think these were all, like, it helped him become who he wanted to be. There were no distractions. And he was focused. And I think that because, like I said, he's willing to, like, he was going to die at any point, which again, he could live till 120, but if he was willing to risk his life for Amisrael, he was willing to live for them. You know, when we ran this race, I remember at one point, not only did he want to go faster by pushing me, but even, like, towards the end of the race, he just kept saying, like, can we start sprinting? Are there any runners in this group? Am I, like, talking to myself? Okay, so you'll get the picture anyway. I know that. And he wanted to just start sprinting, like, as we were getting closer to the race. But when you run a long distance, like, you can't start sprinting too early because you'll bottom out, right? And he just kept saying, like, okay, now can we start? Now can we start? Because obviously he had enough in him that he could have. I, on the other hand, was, you know, preserving whatever energy I had left. But I also know the race course, right? And I know that when you turn and then you have this much to go and then there's the uphill. See, this race here, it's a little unfair. It's so typical Israel where you finish, like, with going uphill. Like, everything here has to be intense, but that's how you earn it. That's how we get stronger. It's okay. So we're finishing the race and you turn and then it's like another kilometer still of, like, uphill. And then you get to a point where then you see the finish line. So I said, Binyam, when we see the finish line in sight, that's when we start sprinting. And sure enough, we're going, you get another little bit uphill, and then you see the finish line. I said, now we floor it. And I think that's really what it's about. I think that if we can right now really picture the end, like, we can picture the finish line. If we can picture that we are Be'ezrat Hashem, so close to this Geulah, so close to Binyan Bayis, so close to Tzvias Ameis and Mashiach, we can floor it. We can push. I know that at the beginning, and I'd ask people to take on a mitzvah, a maaseh chesed. Now I'm like, forget it. Make a list. Go for the list. Forget the one thing. Forget the five things. Like, just push in all the tumim in every possible way. And what I have definitely learned through this whole process is whatever kochot you think you have more. And then when you think that's all you have, you actually have more than that. And I think that's what all these soldiers have proven to us. And that's what the marathoner had. That's what Binyamin had. And that's what the Kohen had. That's what all of them have. They're all teaching us the same thing. We have more kochot than we realize. And it's just time to just fight for the goal. And that's Binyan Bayis in Yerushalayim. We're here, Be'ezrat Hashem, while you're still here, you'll see it. You'll see it and you'll be zocha to dance around it and bring all your family to come join Be'ezrat Hashem. We really all will be zocha the Binyan Bayis and Gula. Be zocha to dance together, please God, with all of Am Yisrael. All your families will come and we'll be able to dance mamash. I'm open to questions. No questions. I've really been asked everything. So if it's out of, like, embarrassment, I promise you I've been asked the craziest things.
How are your other children
doing? So funny, because I feel like I wait for that question every time, because that's the one question that I do get every time, and if you don't, then I feel like I have to ask it for people. But that's a very good question. My kids, v'chasdei Hashem, are good. They don't know otherwise. they don't know that staying in bed and closing the lights and closing the doors and is an option. They just see that we cry, and I will cry in front of them. It happens to be this one. As soon as I anything, she's already has her arm around me. She's like, she knows. So we cry, and then we dance. We have music playing, and we go, and we do, and we're out, and we work, and we learn, and we talk, and people are over, and the door is open, the lights are on, the windows are open, and so that's all they know. And everybody has, this one doesn't like to talk so much, this one likes to talk a lot, this one doesn't like to look at pictures so much, this one, everybody's dealing. Everybody's overall pretty okay.
I heard you speak, I guess it was Shachter.
Okay.
And it's kind of the way you started tonight, what you had said during Shiva, when Americans, I guess, were coming. I was just so impressed that you said that. And that you were so honest about it. And that we kind of proved you wrong, you know. But I just thought that was beautiful. I don't know if you want to share that or...
I wasn't very nice during Shiva. When people came and they said that they were visiting, they don't know me, but they're in Israel visiting and they wanted to come and be Menachem. So I asked them if they were on a one-way ticket or round trip. And if they said round trip, I said, well, then come back and let me know when you're on a one-way ticket and then you can come. I'm not going to lie, I kind of want to feel the same way, but at the end of the day, nachon. It's the goal is still the same, though. The goal is still for everyone to be here. This is what these soldiers are fighting for. This is what they're living for and dying for, so that they can have Eretz Yisrael safe for all of Am Yisrael to be here. Binyamin said he was fighting so that he can have the south all cleared out so everybody has all the space to live. But not everybody can come right now, and that is where I'm nicer. So the fact that people come, even on round-trip tickets, and come another time and another time, and eventually it'll be one way. That is that question.
I just want to thank you so much for coming and sharing your story. My son had the privilege to be in your house. There's no mission to fly you a few weeks ago. And he told me that your son's favorite song was Anu Bima.
That was what?
Anu Bima.
That's my favorite song.
Your favorite song. Okay, he said that he sang it. And I think your son, there was a song that your son loved. And he came to our Shabbos table afterwards and it seems like, no, he sang it. I can't remember what song it was, but you had said, maybe it was Anu Bima.
There was a song
called Binyamin's favorite song.
So Anavim Anavim is one of my favorites, because I feel that if you understand the words to that song, Anavim Anavim, Higiyah, so you modest people, Higiyah Zman Geulaschem, the Geulah is coming, and if you don't believe me, you'll see, the light is shining, like just go look and you'll see. And sometimes I feel like, first of all, because Baruch Hashem, we should all be such Anavim, like Binyamin, and like they're supposed to. Binyamin also never wants people to know what he's doing. He just goes in, does, and leaves. And so many amazing stories of like how he just did things like that. But also like where Am Yisrael is like we think like really are we worthy? Really are we zocha? Really is it possible? And I'm saying like look at my lights, and I just keep thinking all these lights. I mean, not just the Binyamin Meir, but like all of them and more. But interestingly, Binyamin's favorite song is David by Yonatan Rezel. Which is another crazy story in and of itself. Whatever, I was someplace, he was gonna, whatever. And the song, interesting, you hear this, if you listen to the words, it's not a very well-known song, but if you listen to the words, it's like literally Binyamin. To be such a fighter, to be such a dancer, and sing, and to, you listen to it. And it's really all these guys. I was with some other mothers of other soldiers, and I played the song, and everybody's like, that's like my son, that's like my son. Because they're all David HaMelech's. They all learn from the best. This is our soul. This is our army. This is Tzaha. Why do we get ridiculed for being so nice and so humane and wanting to do... because this is who we are. We are a people that we care, and we're gentle, and we're sensitive, and we're also vicious and ferocious when it comes to getting the job done and against enemies. Hey, my last words. Interestingly, though, I will also say, you're talking about Shabbos songs. I don't know, but there was... So Shabbos morning, Binyamin was killed, and his friends was the one that pulled him and tagged him, whatever. And he said he sat there. I mean, Binyamin was already gone, Baruch Hashem, he died instantly. But he said that he said Shema with him and Vidui. And he said, and then he started singing Zmiro Shabbos. He says, I don't know why, I can't explain it. I'm laying with him, and he's... I started singing Zmiro Shabbos with him. So yes, there's definitely something about songs on Shabbos. I don't know what to say. Apparently he had a smile on his face when he was pulled out. I don't know if it's because he was so proud or because he saw the Shechina, and I'll take both.
Do you have family here?
What?
Aside from your immediate family, do you have family here?
Yeah. B'chasdei Hashem, I have one brother that made Aliyah. And then I have a lot of aunts, uncles, cousins. Everybody else is here. But my other siblings are not, my parents are not. Anybody else? Alright, now you get to eat. Alright, how about you?
I want to just mention on behalf of our group. First of all, I'll post the song that Jen was referencing, David by Yonatan Rezal. They actually just re-released it with Yishai Evo. I'll send it to you. Beautiful, beautiful, absolutely beautiful.
I am convinced. I left him all these messages about how the soldiers are relating to it.
Absolutely, absolutely beautiful. I'll post it on our chat. Meretz Hashem. But I would just say as follows, and I apologize in advance if this is at all embarrassing, but over the course of our trip, we're going to be meeting a number of incredible people. Before you leave here tonight, and before Jen is here tonight, you should ask her for a bracha. Because the truth is, there are some people, you know, sometimes we think about, like, tzaddikim, and there are so many different types. The beauty of Klal Yisrael is there are tzaddikim in the Beis Medrash, and there are tzaddikim in the battlefield, and there are tzaddikim in all different areas of life. And a mother, an Eva B'Yisra, who is willing to make that incredible, overwhelming sacrifice for Am Yisrael and for Eretz Yisrael, is one of the Nashim Sidkanios B'Yisra. So you're here, you have her here. I just think, I'm sure she's on a schedule. I know she's not going to have all night to give you brachos, but we all need brachos for different things. You heard from a mother who clearly knew how to raise a son. Didn't sound like it was so pashut, right? But somehow Baruch Hashem raised him to be a keeper of Yisrael. Ask for a bracha to be a proper mother. Ask for a bracha to manage a household. Ask for a bracha for personal strength. Ask for a bracha for emunah. And halavai, Meretz Hashem, in the source of all the brachas that Jen, you will give this beautiful chevra. Meretz Hashem, every bracha that you give, should Meretz Hashem come back to your mishpacha tenfold and all of your beautiful desires and yearnings and she'ifas for geula. Halavai, the collective dancing of all of our soldiers in Shamayim, pounding of their feet on the celestial sphere, should just push the mikdash shalmalam finally down into the mikdash shalmalam. That was good timing. How did you time that?